I met J-Lo doing a TV show, but to be honest, I didn't really like her that much. Not Jenny's not from the block anymore. If you know.
Welcome back to the Prince Huda podcast. Prince Huda here, and today I have a very special guest, a man that does something pretty cool that I'm not really sure how to explain, so I'm glad he's here to explain it today. We have Canada's top mentalist, Ryan Edwards, joining me on the podcast today. Ryan, how's it going?
Not bad. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Good, good. Now, for those who say he looks familiar, we actually did a collaboration a few weeks back on the NFL MVP, and somehow Ryan was able to read my mind, which is still keeping me up on how it works. So I think that's kind of where I wanted to start. Your title being mentalist, a lot of people would kind of assume that means reading minds or some sort of variance of a magician. Can you just explain to me what exactly a mentalist is?
Yeah, it's a great question. I get asked it all the time. I usually say that most people on a daily basis use like 1 to 3 senses at the same time. What I do is combine all 5 senses to create what looks like a 6th sense. And so I always tell people will say, well, what is it? And I say, you know, it's math, psychology, magic, art, science, all combined into one. And that's what appears to be mentalism.
Appears to be or is? Because I think that's the...
It is mentalism. I mean, what I do is mentalism, but it isn't, I'm not truly reading all of your thoughts. I have the ability to get information from you and stuff that I need, or to push you in certain directions and stuff that I would like you to go. But in terms of like, am I psychic? No, I don't believe in them. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Cause when I was kind of doing my research on you, looking on YouTube, a lot of the titles of the videos you've been in are blows my mind or reads my mind. So I just find it interesting that a lot of people will take the mentalist title and immediately correlated with reading minds.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perception of mind reading for sure. I would say that it's the closest thing to actual mind reading that you can get, because I am telling you things that you think I should have no way of being able to know, like who would win the MVP, right? Or the football player that you were thinking of, and stuff. So I would say, yes, it appears it's the closest thing to actual mind reading. But yeah, or at least feels like it. So,
for sure. And in the moment, just because we haven't put out the second video yet, but kind of to spoil it, I'll spoil it now. When you're like, think of the first letter it starts with, and I have it in my brain, and you read it. And like in my mind in the moment, I'm like, shit, how is he seeing this? How does he know what I'm thinking? So
yeah.
Whatever it is you guys do is just, it's unbelievable. And so I kind of wanted to dive into what goes into that. Was there always just this fascination with the idea of mentalism? Was it something else you kind of got into? Was it someone in your family? Like, how does young Ryan go down this path of becoming a mentalist?
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. When I was a kid, I always tell people I was put into a special class, and it was not because I was an X-Men. It's because I couldn't read and write. Like, I was way far behind other kids. And so I always looked at myself being in that class and hearing from other students, like, I was the dumb kid, right? And so I was like, oh, okay, always kind of base myself that way. And I, you know, started fidgeting, doing magic with one of my neighbors. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting and stuff, and kind of took a liking to it and pursued it a little bit. My dad, I remember one Christmas, my dad passed away, it'll be 15 years ago this year. But I remember I said to him, Dad, don't get me like a junky Christmas gift. Instead, I'm going to go to this magic shop, or I'll buy some stuff online. Why don't you just buy me everything that I want? And so he did, and he loved it. He supported it. And he thought it was really cool what I was able to do. But so I decided, I guess, after he passed away, I was like, okay, I'm going to go and do magic for a living. Sought out who I thought was the best Canadian magician or illusionist. Traveled around all over Canada with him and learned that I didn't like it that much. And for this simple reason. And I had already been dabbling in mentalism as well before all this, but we carried 23,000 pounds of equipment to every show, which meant I was the grunt worker that had to lift a lot of heavy boxes and stuff,
right?
And put stuff together. And, you know, my job title was like illusion engineer. And so we also had like 5 or 6 people on staff to run the show. And at the end of the day, I kind of just said, like, if I'm sitting in the audience or watching the audience during the show, if someone sees a woman get cut in half, they're not phoning the police going like, oh my gosh, I just watched a murder happen on stage, or you know, it's not real. They know it's a trick. So like I said, I was already dabbling in mentalism, had a couple friends that were mentalists back then. And so reached out to them and started kind of figuring stuff out myself and said, you know what, I can carry, you know, a backpack and travel around the world, freak people out. And no matter if I tell you that I'm not really reading your mind, you leave going, no, he had to read my mind. That's the only explanation to things. And to me, that was the most real that I could make an experience feel for someone. And so to me, that was always the most important thing, was like, could I make it feel like something else? So, yeah.
So it's some sort of variation of magic then, right? It's just kind of less hands-on, you would say?
I always tell people it's like an offshoot. It started with magic. It's an offshoot. There are a lot of things that come into play with it. Like I said, psychology, math, science, and stuff that come into it where it's not sleight of hand. And so there's things that I say to you or do that I'm trying to get you to go in certain directions and stuff. And then I'm playing off of those things. And so, yeah, I would say at a bare minimum, there is some magic technique or thinking behind things, no doubt about it. But yeah, beyond that, there is a lot more that gets added into it. So.
Was your dad supportive early on of this pursuit? Like, I know you said he bought it for you as a Christmas gift, but from, you know, playing with it as a kid to taking it as more serious as a full-time gig, was that something your dad was supportive of?
Yeah. So it's actually interesting. So I actually didn't hop into it full-time right away. My dad wanted me to be like an electrician or a bricklayer or something like that, something in the trades where I was going to make, you know, a good amount of money and be happy. He worked at Stelco in Hamilton, you know, provided well and everything, but, you know, kind of hated his job. Loved the guys he worked with, but hated the work. And so just kind of wanted to see me happy. when I was in high school, I thought I was going to own my own business. I was huge into sports, still am. I still play sports all the time and still watch pretty much everything. But I thought, oh, I'm going to open a sports store that's like really incredible. Like, you know, Cool Kicks in Canada or something like that, right? And so he, you know, he supported me there, but he was always kind of like, I think, you know, you should get into trade. And so I took business for 2 years and I dropped out, hated it. I was like, I know more than my business school teachers know about business. And here's the reason. Is I met a guy who owned a very successful business. He said, go to school tomorrow and ask your teachers what successful businesses they run. I said, that's a really, really good question. And so I did. And turns out none of them owned businesses. They were all just teachers. And so I said, you're literally just teaching me what a textbook says that I could buy from 10 years ago because it's probably not updated. And now with social media and everything else and AI and, you know, everything changes like day by day, you know, the algorithm changes. The textbook doesn't change though, right? And so I, at that point said, I think I actually know more about running a business today than teachers do in school. And so I dropped out, took a year off, worked. And then I actually, I go to church and got asked by the pastor of the church if I'd become the youth pastor. They were firing the other guy and they wanted me to step in. And so he was a good friend of mine. He said, yes, go ahead. So And I said, I should get educated in this. So I went to university and took religion and theology. Became a pastor for 10 years. Became a pastor for 10 years with a few different churches. And then I always did mentalism on the side. It just wasn't full time back then. And then I guess about 10 years ago now, I just said, that's it. I was finished at my last church and I said, I'm going full time. So, yeah. Was he supportive? No. because he actually never got to see me perform shows like what I do now. I'm sure if he did, if he saw what I was doing now, he would be like, you're killing it. Go ahead, do whatever you want. But back then it was like, you know, we're talking 15, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, even when I'm like graduating and stuff. And it's like, what are you going to do? You know, trades is the best way to go, you know, for like me, a guy like me. He was like, you're really good at building things and stuff. And, you know, I had worked landscape construction and stuff, building interlock pads and everything for a couple of years. He was like, you should do that. You're really good. But yeah, would he think I could make it doing mentalism? I don't know. He may think it's not a real job back then if I said, hey, I'm going to go full time at this. But like I said, if he saw where I was now and what I do now, I think he'd be on board.
I can relate to that. I think same with my dad. Like the minute I turned 16, he was like, okay, you're legal age to get a job. You know, where are you going to be working this summer? And just kind of always heckling me of when to get a job and kind of hard to explain what I do now. I think now that there's opportunities to make money from what I'm doing, I think he sees it a little more clearly. But yeah, I think until that point where quote unquote make it, I think it's still a little vague in his head when he kind of tries to understand what I'm doing. So I relate to that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, for the older generation, I mean, their jobs were like you had to go 9 to 5, you had to leave the house, you had to go somewhere and work for someone. And it was very rare that you worked for yourself, especially doing something like what both of us do, kind of in the entertainment and stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, it's odd. It's not, you know, all my neighbors are always like, what do you do for a living and stuff, you know, but the reward of it is so much better. So.
For sure. My go-to now just to not really mess with people, but just kind of make it seem like I'm the most interesting man in the room. Well, I'm a creator. Like, whoa, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does that entail? And you just have the command of the room. But again, I think once it gets to a certain point where I feel like I've established kind of what exactly I'm doing and what and how I'm getting there, I think that'll be an easier conversation. But for now, it's just to keep it a little vague just for fun. So
yeah, no, that's great. Love it.
Sure. Well, I think that's how I found you was through social media. Like you've done a lot of stuff on television shows, on breakfast television shows, news networks, radio stations. But I think it was through social media clips, just kind of you going up to football players, bodybuilders, people in public. You know, what kind of made that light switch turn on in your head to say, okay, I'm doing this full time. I think social media be the best channel to promote my stuff.
Yeah, it's funny because I would still say like I am tiny on social media. Like I do not have a billion followers or anything like that. There's a guy that used to work backstage for me. He's a mentalist as well, and we're good friends. And you know, he actually blew up on social media and stuff. And he pushed me right from the start, saying like I should be doing it. Doing like Omegle and everything back then. And I was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't have time for this stuff. Like I'm doing real jobs and like going and doing shows. Like, so to me, like social media was kind of like second because, you know, when I started doing this, social media wasn't really a thing. Like, cause I said, I've been doing it now for 22 years. So before my dad passed away, I was obviously doing stuff, traveling and stuff. But never doing like massive, like, you know, 15,000 personal shows and stuff like that. So, but yeah, to me now it's like, it's such an important thing, but I always just say it's more of like a digital resume. So someone comes, usually people find me from my website and stuff. Cause if you search like who's the top mentalist in Canada, I come up first and stuff. And so I usually get found out that way. Or by word of mouth, because I work with a lot of really big companies. And so usually I become friends with the CEOs and they tell their friends and you know, Bob's your uncle that way. But with social media, I thought, I'm into bodybuilding. I did a bodybuilding, couple bodybuilding contests when I was like 18, natural. And so I was like, oh man, I would love to go back to the Arnold Classic and see some of those guys and you know, blow their minds with some mentalism now. And so started doing it. And so Phil hired a videographer and went to town, and I had a lot of fun doing it, and have gotten some recognition from a few of the brands that now kind of sponsor me for stuff. And so that's always a great thing. So makes my job easier. But yeah, I don't know if I answered your question. I know I kind of rambled around everything.
I mean, I was just cool to learn the bodybuilding thing. There's just like a whole other interview right there. That's crazy.
Yeah, I love it. I really think you need to stay physically fit to keep your mind sharp. Because it is kind of like a muscle for us, right? And you have to be working it out at the same time. If you're, you know, if you're, oh, I'm going to say obese, I'll use the word obese. If you're out of shape, you're sluggish and everything else, then you're tired all the time. How do you expect your brain to be working at
right
capacity, right? So you need to be putting the right stuff in your system. You need to be working out and stuff or exercising so that, you know, you can be the best person that you can be. So
that's cool. Do you find that your experience, either bodybuilding or as a pastor or some hybrid of both, help you in this role?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, bodybuilding, you got to go on stage in a Speedo, right? And I remember the Hamilton Spectator wrote a big, like, whole page story on me, because I placed third in Ontario and then went to the world qualifiers. So all of Canada. And placed third there when I was like, I think it was 17 or 18. But I still remember the most daunting, scariest thing was going back in the day in Oakville. It used to be right off of, right by where like Dave and Buster's is and stuff in Oakville.
Oh, Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill, that's it. Yeah, there used to be like this bodybuilding store there. And they sold like equipment and stuff, but they sold like the Speedos and stuff. And so I remember going in there and buying it and bringing it up to the counter. And it was like the most embarrassing thing I ever did. Because I was like, oh, okay, here, I'm going to buy this little tiny Speedo thing, right? And so that was odd. But then getting on stage is like, you know, I was dieted down. I was like 3% body fat. Like it was
holy
gross. Like the day before my contest, we did all the skin calipers and I was 4%, still had another, excuse me, whole day of dehydrating and taking wine and stuff. So you're dehydrating more. So I was probably like 3% or under 3%. Like the lady who's like the Canadian champion was like, I thought you should have won. You could see like every muscle fiber in you. Like it was insane. And so doing that though, it's like, it's 100% adrenaline, right? Like you get on stage and it is like the ultimate high. And I would say the same with being a pastor. It's like, you know, you prepare all week for your sermon and stuff, and then you get on stage, up at the pulpit or up on the stage, and you have to speak in front of, you know, 100 or so people. You have to make sure that it's good, right? And that they're going to stay, I don't want to say entertained, but to a certain extent, you do have to keep them a little bit entertained, because like, if you don't, they're going to fall asleep, right? So I had a friend that said, you should always do like hook, book, look, took. And I now use it for everything, pretty much, that I do. Anytime I'm writing something, like you need to hook the person, right? So you got to have something right off the bat. So hook, look, hook, book. So book obviously was research behind it, so by biblical stuff that to do with your hook. Look was like, look how this actually affects your life and stuff. And then took is like, okay, now leave there and do something with it, or how is it going to change you once you leave this place. And so I thought it was a really great thing. It was the best way of preparing something that I've ever done. And so even with my like theater shows, there's always a video at the start to get you hooked in and stuff, like what is this guy doing, what's going on, and then I give an explanation. Obviously I don't give a full book, I'm not reading scripture and stuff, but like I give an explanation of what I'm going to do and what the show is kind of based on. And then it's like, okay, now Look is like, here, we're going to do a bunch of crazy stuff. And then Took is like, hopefully I'm leaving you with an experience that you'll never forget. And maybe it changes your life to get you to do what you want to do for a living and stuff. So.
And you learned that through being a pastor?
Yeah, that was 100%. That was my mentor as a pastor told me that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite the different industries or avenues to be in to kind of lock in here, but it seems like you have a good grasp of why you ended up where you are and what experiences through bodybuilding and being a pastor kind of brought you to being a mentalist. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've wasted any time in life. Maybe if I did this 15 years earlier or something, would I be further ahead? Maybe I'd have more clients, but I think I learned lessons through the other things that kind of shaped who I am now and how I perform and what I do. So
for sure. And I think that's kind of been the goal with this endeavor I've been on, of just kind of finding people who are passionate about what they do and are doing something right now, either working towards becoming that version of themselves that is the dream or currently living that dream. And so it's very cool to hear that you don't have any regrets about not going into it earlier, but you're happy with where you are now.
Yeah, no, 100%. Those things obviously help me to relate to people in different avenues. Like I said, I do the Arnold Classic and the Mr. Olympia contest. I've been the last couple of years and stuff, and I'll be going down again in a month to do the Arnold Classic. And so for me to be able to talk to people in that industry to go like, I've been there, I've done it, I know what it is. I've had some injuries and stuff now, so I couldn't do that anymore if I wanted to. And, you know, I think that they kind of still respect that. They're like, okay, he knows what he's talking about. He's in shape. And so I still kind of fit their brand and stuff as well. So.
Who's the most famous person you've ever performed for?
Oh, that is a great question. I didn't perform for, I met J-Lo doing a TV show. But to be honest, I didn't really like her that much. Jenny's not from the block anymore. I met her when we were filming a TV show in Atlanta that I was a consultant on, helping a couple other magicians on there because I wasn't American, so I couldn't actually perform on the show because the prize money was like 100 grand or something like that. And so met her, met a few other people from the TV industry out there. I got a call last year to do, it's Michael Keaton's like party at his house in the States.
Wow.
It was pretty cool. It didn't end up panning out, but, which sucked, but yeah, I mean, I did the Super Bowl last year, and stuff. So meeting some of the football players and stuff was pretty cool. And like watching the game yesterday, obviously, like I know some of the Chiefs and some of them follow me on Instagram and stuff. So next week you're gonna see reruns of some of the football stuff I did from last year because of obviously the Chiefs being in it. But yeah, I don't know if I could say like one person though that's like the most famous person I've ever met, because I've met a bunch of people along the way. If we said like magic industry and stuff, obviously David Copperfield. Friends with Chris Kenner, who is David's executive producer, he's like right hand man. And so I had dinner with David and stuff in August, and you know, there was a lot of people that were very jealous around that night. But yeah, so I'm friends with those guys and a few other people and stuff. But
I saw Penn and Teller was they had a quote on your site. You performed for them or with them before?
Yeah, so I did Fool Us, which is at the Rio. In Vegas, where you try to fool them. I think I did. They were kind of gave me a weird explanation, but we had all of these cans of pop. And so because of it, there was licensing issues and it never aired. So, but still did the shows. The cool thing is they said to me, we've been trying to think of how to do something exactly like this for a few years and couldn't come up with anything. And so to know that they've been trying to do that and I did it before them was pretty cool, because it took me, it was like a 6-year journey trying to figure out the trick that I did for them. So
Damn. I'm just trying to process that. 6 years for one trick, or like 6 years working on this trick to make it better each time, or just to do it to pull it off once?
No, yeah. Now I can do it all the time, but it's a pretty big demonstration where someone tastes different cans of pop, and I'm blindfolded, and then I'm able to tell them what they're tasting. And there is no way that I should be able to know. They mix up the cans and stuff. I can still tell them what they're tasting. And then at the end, I say, what if I not only manipulated that person's taste buds, but I manipulated the minds of everyone in the audience? Because they all hear the cans crack open. They see the person tasting it. The person is in agreement that they're tasting Coke. And then I pour them out and they're all cans of water. And then I hand that water out to be tasted right away.
Wow.
And so it took many, many, many variations. Even when we were literally rehearsing the demonstration for the show, a couple weeks leading up to it, we figured out a new thing. We were like, oh my goodness, why didn't we ever think of this before? And changed the whole demonstration. And so it, it's taken, I would say, 6 years to get from start to finish. Obviously, I wasn't working on it like every day. It was a process to get there.
You ever have to deal with like hecklers, people being, oh, that's bullshit, I saw how he did it, blah, blah, blah. How do you deal with that?
So I had a residency at Dave & Buster's in Vaughan for 2 years. And so we did a show at a 6:30 show and an 8:30 show, I think. We did an 8 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show. That's what it was. And so 8 o'clock usually wasn't bad, lots of families and stuff. And then by the 10 o'clock show, you get a lot of people that are, had too many drinks and
inebriated, yeah.
Or they are drinking heavily during the show and stuff. And so, yeah, I had people, we'd make it as random as possible, throw out frisbees or throw paper balls and stuff around the audience to get an audience member. And like I had one person one time, no matter who I picked to come up on stage, no matter how random it was, they always had to yell something out like, oh, I don't believe it, that person's in on it and stuff. And then I would go out into the audience to get someone. And I remember the guy yelled like, if anyone wants a tattoo, here's my tattoo shop. And like, I have lines that I'll say if someone is being a little disruptive to kind of put them in their place. This guy got so bad that I said something. They finally got up and left the room, which was great.
Oh,
no, it was fantastic.
Okay.
And I immediately said to the audience, do you hear that? And everybody sat and I said, it just got like 3 octaves lower in this room. And they all started laughing and clapping. Like they were clapping on the way out and stuff. Like the audience knew that this person was being super disruptive at this point and taking away from theirs, their show and stuff. And so nothing went wrong during the show because of it, but it's a distraction that's not called for. And so we took care of it. But
right. So nobody's necessarily calling you out on a trick or, oh, I saw how he did, or, oh, I know how he does this. It's more just
general like stupidity in the theaters. I'll get the odd person that tries to like fool me, or like they'll change their mind last second or something and they really try to screw you over. But usually I can combat that myself, and so the audience isn't aware of it. But yeah, you get that every once in a while. So
has a trick ever gone wrong? Like any mistake of your own, or someone on stage with you doesn't do what they're supposed to and it just goes wrong?
For sure. I was going to say that is probably the best answer to it, is that the audience member has not followed instructions properly. And it doesn't matter how clear I can be and stuff. There's just some people that just don't listen. And so especially when it's something like if I'm blindfolded and stuff, like then I can't see what they're doing. And stuff, so it makes it more difficult. But I would say for the most part, if something's gone wrong on stage, I would say 99% of the time it hasn't been myself that's made a mistake. it's been that the audience member has done something like totally off the cuff and like what they're not supposed to be doing. So, but yeah, I would say I get the odd thing wrong every once in a while, and it's like I'm more surprised, but I actually kind of like it because I don't get too much stuff wrong. So it's kind of refreshing when that happens. So.
What's the biggest show you've ever done?
18,000 people. Yeah.
Where was that?
Was the biggest. It was for a bank. I won't say what bank it was, but they had this huge conference.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was like all of their, I don't want to say, I don't know if it was all of their employees, but it's like a global bank. And so, yeah, it was massive. But that's the biggest that I've done. Most of the time it's, you know, you get anywhere from like 500, sometimes a couple thousand people and stuff. Those are always fun as well. But I even like doing, I did one for Google that was like five people one time. And it was so much fun because we became friends with everybody and stuff, right? So, cause it's so much more intimate. And so that's why I enjoy doing those as well. But there's just not the same energy in the room. Like feed off of a big huge audience. So.
What do you prefer then? Like the smaller, the smaller intimate venue, medium sized, or like these grand scale performances?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I said, I'll do some shows like private shows where it's like 15 people or 25 people, something like that. And that's really nice because you can use almost everybody in the room for a demonstration where, you know, when you're doing, you know, 10,000 people, you can't do that, right? Like not everybody is going to be able to partake. I do some things that everybody partakes from their seats, but like not everybody's obviously going to be able to come up and do a demonstration live. And so to me, the bigger the audience, the more energy, as long as they're a great audience, like they've come ready to watch something, then it's, there's nothing like it because of the energy that you're taking from them. Like when you hear a round of applause from thousands of people compared to 25 people, it's, you know, it's night and day. So the bigger, the better. But like I said, it's like a band playing, like going back home and playing, you know, their local bar for 50 people or 100 people. There's still something cool about it that is really nice.
What's cool about what you do is that you can do it for a large audience, like you said, or even just one-on-ones, like what you did with me or some of the clips on your socials with various bodybuilders or football players. Like you're able to scale it up and down based on the size, which I think makes it a very, very versatile, you know, trick or skill to have.
Yeah, no, that's why I like it. Like I said, I pack small but play big, and I can go and play the biggest stadium or cruise ship or whatever from like I said, a backpack basically, which I love.
Is there a goal for like biggest show? I know you just had cruise ship slip there. Is that something you want to do? Is there a certain venue or number you want to hit?
Yeah, no, I did cruise ships a couple of years ago. Now I'm married. My first cruise ship was the first year I got married. And it was over Christmas time.
Wow.
Our first Christmas and a couple, I said, I'm heading out to do a cruise. And so, you know, I spent Christmas alone in my cabin, FaceTiming my wife and stuff. And then one of my other buddies was an entertainer on the ship. And so like we had dinner and stuff. But other than that, now I have a 2-year-old son. And so for me, my wife always jokes that like, she, you know, she loves what I do. She met me at one of my shows, but she always jokes like, oh yeah, you know, you're going on vacation. It's like, I'll go to Vegas for a week or something, or, you know, somewhere nice for a week and stuff. And she's like, oh yeah, you're worth vacation kind of thing. And so for me, like doing the cruise ship, I performed for one night, two shows, one night, and then that was it for the week. But the rest of the time I'm stuck on the boat, right? So it's hard to not say, like, when she's here watching our son and working, that, like, I'm not on vacation, right? So for me, I just said, I'll probably wait until he's a little bit older now to jump back into that. But it also, to me, I didn't have a great time. Like, it was during COVID as well, so we were stuck on the ship. as entertainers, everybody else could get off. And so I was like, I'm gonna put those on the sideline. I keep getting asked by different companies if I'll put my name through to do them, but again, if I did it, it'd be like, okay, I'll do it for 1 or 2 weeks of the year. But like, there's guys I know that are on cruise ships like 50 weeks of the year, and I don't want to do that.
No, that sounds brutal. From the, you kind of mentioned it there, when it comes to getting gigs or booking shows, are you now at a point where people just reach out to you and say, hey, we want you this date, here and there? Or are you reaching out to certain entities saying, hey, I'd love to perform? Like, how does that dynamic work?
Yeah, I would say where I'm at in my career now, most people reach out to me. It's very rare now. I used to do cold calling and stuff, and I should get back into it just because for me, it's a fun like task, I guess, to do. Like, it's kind of like a little challenge to be like, okay, if I make 50 phone calls today, like how much can I bring in, right? In shows and stuff. And
right.
And I should do it more, but I guess some days I become lazy working for myself that I don't push it as hard as I should. But, you know, I've set up financial goals and stuff this year. And so if it takes doing that, then I do it. Then I'll, you know, call previous clients and stuff. Hey, what's going on? Do you have anything coming up and stuff? Like, let's make something happen. And then I do. And so that, you know. But a lot of times, yeah, it's reaching out to people. Like, I've become friends with a lot of my clients, and so it's like reaching out to them to see what's going on with them and if I can help them in any way and stuff. So,
how hard was it early on to get gigs when you're just trying to start out? Is it just word of mouth? Is it friends or people you know that you're trying to just push to have you do shows?
Yeah, I started working at a restaurant.
I tell everybody
that's ever asked me, like, would you mentor me in doing mentalism and stuff? I always tell them, go get a restaurant job. And most of them don't listen to me, but I think it's the most valuable thing that you can do, because you have to approach a bunch of strangers, interrupt them, perform for them for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, like make sure that they have had a great time. And hopefully you'll get a tip from them as well. And so then you're paid by the restaurant and you're getting tips as well. But yeah, to me, it's like you're doing mini shows, and you know, you do 50 mini shows a night is a pretty cool thing. And with like a ton of my scripting, that's where it came from, is because I would go through, like I'd get a new demonstration that I figured out that I was like, okay, I want to do this routine, and I would do it and it'd be okay the first time. But like now I can do that routine 50 times in one night, where if I was just doing big stage shows, you can't do that. So to me, I always say it's like working a restaurant for a mentalist or a magician is like a comedian going to open mics, right? Like, that's the best way for a comedian to get good at comedy, is by going and bombing a few times. And so, you know, with this, like I get to go and do mini shows every 5-10 minutes. And that was what helped me get out as well, because people would be like, oh, this would be awesome to have at my party next week and stuff. I'd be like, yes, I could do that. And then pretty soon I was like, oh, okay, well now, you know, I've done their house party, now they've recommended me to do their corporate party.
Right. So it's almost like professional networking with your audience.
Yeah, 100%. I would say what I do, I would say probably 90% of people, maybe 95% of people on earth have never seen live in person.
Yeah.
So you're giving that person an experience at the restaurant that they've never had. And so they want to share that with their friends. And so, you know, they want to get you out to their place or their work. And so you network really quickly. But like I said, most people don't want to do it because they go, oh, it's not like I can make tens of thousands of dollars doing a big show. And I can make a few $100 doing a restaurant. And so they'll go, oh, well, that's under me. And I go, oh, man, some of the greatest mentalists or magicians or entertainers in the world started at like little dive bars and stuff, right? And working for next to nothing. But they honed their craft there. And I think that's so important. Then it keeps you fresh. Like if you're doing something every week, you know, if I have a month off doing a big, huge show, but I've done 8 restaurants or something in the meantime, I know I'm not rusty. Like I can hop right on stage and be, you know, bang on, where another guy may struggle off the bat. So
it's like professional athletes, like getting shots up, staying warmed up.
Exactly. That's the best way I could. You said it perfectly. I think it's literally like you're getting ready for game day.
Yeah, a couple athletes here, right? And I mean, we know the grind for sure.
Yeah.
Sure. To round off here, we kind of talked about the full journey here. So what got you started in the game, what you're kind of doing now, and then looking ahead, crystal ball, whether it's end of 2025, 5 years, 10 years down the road, what's Ryan's goal?
It's a great question. So I go, for me, it's always been, my goal is just financial freedom for my family. And so it's always about supporting them and making sure that we can have a really nice house and do really cool things throughout the year. And that money is never an issue. And so to me, it's just locking in for like a few more years. I guess a couple of years ago, I started speaking to businesses, doing consulting for businesses. Consulting with them on sales and how to increase sales from techniques that I use with what I do. And that's been great, but I'd love to, you know, expand that business even more. And so that's one of the big goals this year, is just to continue to do more and more and more of that. Goals going forward, I guess just make people happy, man. You know, I'd love to grow my social media more. I need to dive into that harder than ever this year. But, you know, just looking for new cool opportunities and stuff. Like for when you reached out, I was like, yeah, that's a cool opportunity. I love what you're doing. You know, I'm a huge football fan. you know, it sucked that the Bills lost yesterday, but you know, I love football. I play fantasy football. I love hockey and stuff. So any opportunity that I can take that, you know, links me with someone else that's doing awesome stuff, that's what I want to do. I mean, I don't have to make $10 million a year to be happy, but you know, I want to make sure that, you know, everything is taken care of, that my family has nothing to worry about, that, you know, I think it doesn't sound great, but I think that's everyone's goal in life, probably, is like, I just want to be good. But
yeah,
but I mean, I want to be able to go, do you want to go on a trip tomorrow? Yes. Let's, okay, call work, take off work. Let's go, you know, like let's go do something fun. You know, or if I buy something, I don't have to worry like, oh my gosh, do I have money in the bank to be able to do that and stuff. It's just, you know, it can happen. Yeah.
That's a great answer. Yeah. It's very, very wholesome answer. You know, the last two guys there had single, no kids, no kind of responsibilities right now other than just committing to themselves. So it's nice to hear, you know, someone a little more grounded, like, oh, okay, financial freedom, being able to do that. What you said about the trip there, I really like that.
Yeah, I'm all about, so one of the things I'll share quickly, because my friend says it's my superpower, is creating community. So we just moved into this new house, November 2023. And it's a nice little cul-de-sac. It's like, you know, there's like 9 houses on the street. And everybody on the street already calls me the mayor. And they've lived here 50 years, some of them, like for a long, long time. But my, like I said, my one of my very close friends, he says, your superpower is building community. So in the summertime, like May this past year, we did a big potluck barbecue out in the circle. And then in the fall, we did a chili cook-off out there as well and stuff, and just getting people together and sharing experiences with people, learning from people. Like my neighbor, he's 91 years old. You know, I love to talk with him and learn, because I'm like, he's gone through things in his life that I can't imagine. And so there's things that I can learn from him. So to me, building community, loving everybody around you, financial freedom, you know, those things are, to me, the most important things in life. You know, it's, you know, who your friends are, who you can, I said before, the took, right? Like, what is the lasting impression I can have on people's lives around them? And so for me, when all of a sudden the neighbors are like, hey, you're the mayor of the street, what's the mayor got planned next and stuff, right? It's like, wow, okay, these people already put me up here and I just moved here, right? And so it's like, that to me is a cool thing. So
that's great. Well, I hope that's the took for people from this episode too, is to just, you know, you get back from the world what you put in. And it seems like what you're doing with the mentalism, just kind of hearing your story and your personality, all the things that have shaped you, it makes a lot of sense that you're in the position you are, just because of, you know, the interactions you've had with people through different disciplines, and just hearing that it's not just an onstage persona. You're like that in real life too. It's very cool. So
thanks, man. I appreciate that. And yeah, right back at you. It's fantastic meeting you in person and then getting to do this as well. So
for sure. Yeah. Definitely hope to do some more collabs down the line. But, you know, let the people know where they can find you. I know you're on Instagram. Do you got a couple of other venues to promote here, or avenues?
Mentalism.ca on everything, Instagram, Facebook. You search Ryan Edwards as well. But, yeah, mentalism.ca, that's the website. That's the Instagram. I've got speaking of, like, shows, I have a local show coming up. It's actually in Brantford at the Rope Factory, February 21st. So if you search Limitless on, I can't remember, Eventbrite. I was like, what's the name of this thing? But Eventbrite, you can get tickets and stuff on there. But yeah, if you want to come see something live. But again, it's a community thing. Like, it's a venue that's been there forever and stuff. And so I said, let's do something back home and freak some people out.
Sweet. Yeah, well, definitely, if you're not based in Ontario, make sure to follow Ryan on socials. If you are, go out to this show. I promise you, I had a one-on-one show, blew my mind, still wondering about these tricks. If you haven't seen it on social already, make sure to follow me on social at the Prince Huda, as well as subscribe to the channel for new episodes of the podcast. Ryan, again, thank you for coming on. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening, and we will see you soon. Peace.